you doing, man?
Oh, great.
Fantastic. Hey, there's something different about this today, because you are on the phone and I am here.
And we're trying to figure out how to capture audio because it's the audio in.
Indeed. Yeah, I think I got it figured out. As long as you can hear me, that's I think that's the important part.
Yeah.
Well, hey.
I can hear you just fine.
It's the Sprocket Podcast, episode 31. By the time most of you hear this, I will be out on the road, and I will be, I'll be bike touring with my friends, and Brandon will be home. I probably puttering around in the garden, I suppose.
That'll be it.
Yeah. Well, you're up in Seattle, is that correct?
I'm actually beyond Seattle.
Really?
I'm on Whidbey Island.
Oh, wow.
At Jenna Farm.
Nice.
Yeah.
Whidbey is great. That's actually where I will be in about 2 days.
Wow, that's soon.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful place. There's a lot of livestock everywhere, really great views of just about everything. It's like a swirling bit of the Shire plopped in the north of the heart of Cascadia.
And you were there for a celebration of matrimony. It was your future sister-in-law?
That's it, yep.
There you go.
My fiancé's sister.
Did it work? Did they get married?
It worked!
Hooray!
Yes, it did. It was gorgeous the past 2 days, and then today big rain clouds were hovering over it and only sputtering, and then it finally stopped sputtering about an hour before the ceremony. So we had everything set up for an indoor wedding in a grange hall, or a granary, excuse me. I hope that didn't get you too excited about grange halls.
Well, I do like the grange halls.
He does. So, you do. I turn to the camera and say...
Please, the royal we.
We hauled everything back out and threw it on the lawn and had a grand old time. And, it was great. There were slugs everywhere.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. Washington is profuse with those.
Yeah, I bet you at least, 5% of its dry weight is actually slugs. So
I would imagine.
And then it's been a really unusual winter, springtime here. So there's like 40 nests of bald eagles on the island. So actually saw one flying over our car with what looked to be a giant like bullfrog or something like that hanging from its accomplishing talons.
It's like maybe it was a kitten. You never know.
Yeah.
Well.
Could have been a lamb.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'll let you go here because you've got other things to do. You've got stuff on the lawn all over. Today was Petalpalooza. We went to the Star Trek versus Star Wars ride, and there was some absolutely fantastic stuff. So maybe I can throw some pictures up on the blog post from that event. And tonight, of course, is the World Naked Bike Ride, and I'm going out to ride declothed. So hurrah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have some friends that'll be joining you out there?
My wife and I'll be there, and then a bunch of strangers because I don't think we want to do that with any of our friends. I think it somehow with strangers it's fine. With friends it's just plain awkward. So
it's awkward.
Yeah.
Well, is it supposed to rain tonight?
It already sprinkled quite a bit. It looks just looking out the window here. It looks as though it's starting to clear up. So it may in fact be perfect weather for cycling about in the buff.
Otherwise, you can always go get a transparent poncho.
That's right. that's a pretty good idea. Well, hey, man, I'm gonna give them some news headlines here, but I'll let you go and you do your thing.
Sounds good, man.
All right, happy weekending.
Yep. Adios.
Well, for all of you out there on the internet in Sprocket Land, I have some news headlines for you. So I'm going to read those off now. This is. Article from bikeportland.org. Tori Bortman, formerly of KABU, I believe, and possibly still of KABU. Anyways, she knows a lot about bikes, and she's got a thing that tells you how to take care of your brakes and wheel rims. If you've got an annoying squeal or squeak that you want to get rid of, she talks about cleaning and maintaining your wheels. The Oregonian has an interesting article about how cardboard bike helmets actually might protect your head better than regular polyurethane, or whatever that word is. There's a cardboard option that is actually pretty sturdy and takes care of your head really well. And last but not least, the cutest bike train ever. There's from the Bike Trailer blog, there's a Burley Bob trailer that I think was outfitted with something that looks like an old-fashioned red caboose, and it's just the best thing you've ever seen. So with that, we've got our featured interview that we recorded pre-taped for this one a couple weeks ago. This is Jed Lazar from Soup Cycle. It's a soup delivery business here in Portland, and we would like you to hear that. So here you go.
Good.
All right. Well, I apologize for any white noise or pink noise or whatever color it is. But anyways, shall we get started?
Let's do it.
Fantastic. This is Brock.
And I'm Brandon.
And we're talking with Jed from Soup Cycle, which is here in Portland. And Jed, why don't you start by explaining what it is that Soup Cycle is and does?
Well, Soup Cycle is a little business that started 3 years ago, and we make organic soups, breads and salads, and we deliver them by bicycle all over Portland to people at homes and offices.
Which is pretty cool. What was the name you guys came up with for your delivery area was Souplandistan, I believe.
Yeah, we deliver to Souplandistan, and then we actually started doing a couple deliveries down to Soupvallis, Corvallis, an hour and a half south of here.
That's a little bit farther away than most of your places. Is that is there a special arrangement for those deliveries?
Yeah, those folks are. We obviously don't bike down I-5 to deliver our soup to them.
Right.
So we have our soup transported, and then once it gets there, it's delivered by bicycle.
Nice. Does it go by freight truck or Amtrak or some other way?
You know, we have a private transportation company that just comes on up, picks it up, and brings it on down.
Very nice. That's cool. So you're expanding your service area. Well, that's kind of exciting. I was thinking it would be interesting to maybe to start with the story of Soup Cycle. You've told it to me once before, and I thought it was just a fascinating story of kind of how this came to be. So,
sure. Well, I was at a school called Bainbridge Graduate Institute, and it's an MBA in sustainable business program on Bainbridge Island.
Okay. I hear it's beautiful up there.
It is. It's a gorgeous island. It's just a ferry ride from Seattle. And the last year of school, the whole curriculum is set up around creating a business plan. So you come up with an idea, you pitch it to other students and the professors, and you try and get a group of students to work with you on it. And if you can, then you work on the business plan throughout the year. So I started the business with my business partner, Shauna Lambert, and she had heard about somebody down in Austin, Texas, who'd started a business delivering soup by bicycle.
Very nice.
And he'd done well at it, but he'd grown kind of to a point where he decided to move beyond the bicycle. And we really liked the idea of soup on a bike. Neither of us had started businesses before, and we thought, let's not take on the world. Let's just do soup on a bike and see how that works.
Right. It's low startup cost, right?
It's a low startup cost, and it's a lot simpler than other business models. And so we thought about it. We pitched it. Other students liked it. We worked on it together at school that last year. And things looked like they were coming together. The financials looked like they could work out, and the marketing looked like it could be fun. And so when we were a couple weeks out from graduating, we had this conversation, are we actually going to do this? And decided we would. So we graduated, and 2 weeks later, we launched the business.
That's incredible. Had you were you already a lifestyle bicyclist at that point anyway? Had you experience with hauling heavy things around hilly towns?
I know myself well enough to know that if I owned a car, I would probably drive it all the time.
Yeah.
I have that lazy streak. And so I don't own a car. And Portland's one of those incredible cities where it's possible to do that. I was raised in Salt Lake City, Utah, and it's difficult and dangerous to do it there.
Right.
So I became a lifestyle cyclist when I moved to Portland, and then had a summer job as a pedicab driver, which is a really tough workout and great way to learn sales. Not a great way to make money.
So I've heard, actually. I mean, it's the sort of thing where I don't know. We actually have a fellow that we're going to talk to, I think, at some point later on. Amos from the Bike
That's
Temple
right, yeah.
recommended us to a fellow who works with a pedicab job. But as I understand, you're basically just working for tips, right?
Yeah, that's how the company I worked for was. And so if you get lucky, you can walk with a fair amount of money. And if you don't, then you walk and you're in the hole.
Right. And so you, I imagine you got tired of that fairly quickly and said, hey, I bet there's another business model.
Yeah, that's kind of what happened. Well, part of it was inspiration from being a pedicab driver and just seeing what's possible with a bicycle, seeing how much cargo you can pull. There were times when I fit a whole bachelorette party of 8 women on a pedicab.
That's impressive.
Wow. And
and squirrely, I bet.
Yeah. Well, I probably shouldn't say that. If that makes it back to the pedicab business owner, I think we had weight restrictions.
We can cut that out if you like.
Yeah. Right. It was seeing the viability of the bicycle as a critical aspect of a business. And it wasn't till the following year that the idea of Soup on a Bike and Soup Cycle came up, but that was definitely churning in the back of my head the whole time.
That was catchy.
That's my cell phone.
Nice. Last time we were doing one of these, I think my little machine made a noise as well. So you're in good company, sir. I was going to ask what are the logistics of the Soup Cycle business as it stands now? Like you say you make soup, it's organic, it's all good. Where do the ingredients come from and how do you get them to the customer once they've been soupified?
Yeah, well, the logistics have changed a lot since we started. We started with just, throwing a party and inviting all of our friends and awesome. Asking everybody to sign up for soup. The way it works, it's a soupscription.
Nice.
And for listeners, you can't see that I'm doing air quotes. Soupscription.
I actually saw it, but we should make sure everyone who can't see it knows that they were air quotes because it's awesome.
And so we just asked everybody at the party to sign up. 7 of our friends took a chance on us, and neither my business partner or I were professional cooks. And we just started the next week. We got a commercial kitchen. We got some great recipes together, some family recipes. We cooked the soups, and I did my first 7 deliveries that week. And I just remember biking around. At that time we had a little recumbent bike, and it was a beautiful summer day, and I thought, wow, this is the easiest job I've ever had. so we grew from there. We knew that we had 6 months to get to 100 weekly deliveries. That was kind of our sink or swim number. We were going to run out of money after 6 months.
Sure.
If we didn't get 200 customers. So we just, busted ass and, worked all the street fairs and talked to everybody we knew about it. And after about 5.5 months, we made it barely. We hired our first employee and then have just kind of grown since then. So yeah, it's changed a lot since we first started. Initially, we were buying all of our ingredients, retail from New Seasons. And
which I suppose is an expensive way to go if you're trying to make it into a business.
It was so expensive. But, like I said, we weren't professional cooks when we started. We hadn't worked in the business. We really figured it out as we were going along. And so we made a lot of mistakes. And that was one of them. But we slowly grew to where we could be ordering directly from distributors who work with local farmers. And so that's one of the things that's changed over time is that we are now working with distributors who focus on local and organics.
Yeah.
And we've grown our customer base slowly over the 3 years from doing those 7 deliveries the first week. Now, this last week, we did 473 bicycle deliveries.
Congratulations, sir.
Thank you. I know it's kind of unbelievable when I step back and think about it.
It's got to feel good to see it kind of take off. I hear that when you start a business, that's some of the trickiest parts is like the first couple of years because you're not turning a profit and you're not you just don't know if it's going to work or not, but it seems like you've kind of reached that point where it's become a viable thing and you're starting to see some of the fruits of it.
Yeah, it is tricky. One of the pieces of advice that I got when I was first starting was that if you really want to make something new, start to quit your job and just dive in. And that's a scary proposal. But for me, that is what I had to do. We worked our other jobs and Soup Cycle for a couple of months, but it just wasn't possible.
That would be backbreaking on the schedule, I bet.
It's backbreaking. And, you know, starting a business takes 80 hours a week, you know, 6 to 12 months. That's just what you end up doing. There's so much to do. So now I'm, you know, I now that we've gotten a higher level of customers, we've got employees, and we've got some of our responsibilities shifted to them, it's, you know, we still work a lot, but it's definitely a better work-life balance.
That's good. It seems like you probably you have used the golden tool of delegation to your advantage to the point where you can finally get some time off for yourself.
Yeah, that's the idea.
That's good.
What are some of the ingredients that were most difficult to find within your goals for what food should be to get local or organic?
No, yeah. Well, we still struggle with that because, well, each week we do three soups. We do a vegan soup, a vegetarian soup, and a meat soup. And then in the summer, some people aren't as soup oriented, so we do a deli salad as well. So, like, you know, chicken tarragon was this week's salad, or yakisoba noodle with, you know, snap peas, those kinds of things.
I'm getting hungry.
And so, yeah. So some of the ingredients are hard to get local organic, and some of them are just going to always be hard to get local organic. So for example, a lot of vegan soups, their base is coconut milk. Coconuts don't grow in the Northwest.
No coconut trees here.
Just like coffee and cocoa beans don't grow in the Northwest. And so what we've decided to do is we've decided to focus primarily on local organic, but we don't want the flavor to suffer, and we don't want the variety to suffer. And so since our customers are weekly customers, we have to offer a huge variety of soups. We have over 50 soups that we've got. And in order to have that number, and in order to have customers continue their interest in, you know, weekly soup, we offer soups with coconut milk in it. So that's one of the compromises that, you know, we've had to make. Sure. Now, that said, you know, something like 75% of our ingredients are organic and come from within a 400-mile radius. And that fluctuates throughout the year. In the winter, of course, very little grows for a few months in the Northwest. And so we have to get more of our produce from California. In the summer, everything grows in the Northwest except coconuts.
Right.
And so
they're a tropical fruit carried by swallows, I believe.
Yeah. Armies of swallows across the ocean. Yeah. So in the summer, it's really easy to get everything within 100 or 200 miles. It just fluctuates depending on seasonality.
Yeah. But it seems like, I mean, it would be easy to say, you know, we're going to go hardcore about this and only do local stuff. But like you were saying, like, variety is both the spice of life and probably the spice of business and repeat customers. And so if you're going to try and get the variety that most people are accustomed to in their lives, it seems like there are many compromises that we all make from day to day. Like, you know, some of us have hard stance against using fuel, but eventually you got to ride a bus, or you've got to, you know, hop on something. And it just seems like you're doing a good job of towing the line as best you can. And I guess if you're gonna make a vegan soup
without settling for just selling people like barley and water for 6 months out of the year is your vegan option,
because I'm sure that wouldn't sell. So
right. Well, you know, I've heard that the owner of New Seasons has an expression, and that expression is no margin, no mission. And what he means by that is no profit margin, no mission. And if you're not making money, then you don't have a company, and then your company can't achieve a lot of the other things that you want to achieve. And so, yeah, you've got to make some compromises, and at the same time, stay really true to why you started the business in the first place.
Yeah. Would you say, do you have a lot of vegan customers, or what's the ratio? I mean, you do three varieties each week, but how many folks are really excited about the vegan soups out of your customer base?
The meat soups are the most popular.
Okay.
The vegan soups, and it's funny, of the vegan soups, I think that a lot of the people who order them aren't actually vegan. They want a lower calorie soup. And so something without, you know, a lot of dairy or a lot of chicken meets that.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was curious, as far as you mentioned, there's you and the co-founder. Who else is involved with Soup Cycle, and what's your workforce like?
We've got 7 employees, and so that's mostly Soup Cyclers. That's the people who help in the kitchen, chopping vegetables, and you know, packaging the soup, labeling everything, and then on our delivery days, we all, you know, take the soup, load up trailers, and attach them to our bikes, and then go off on our delivery routes for, you know, 5, 6, 7 hours. And get the soup to the customers. So that's most of our employees are.
Very nice. When you're delivering, is that, you said there's several routes. I think you break them out by neighborhood, right?
Yeah, we break them out by quadrant. So people who live in the Northeast and North Portland, they get their soup on Tuesdays. They're downtown or Northwest Wednesdays, and Southeast is on Thursdays.
Very good. I was curious. I would imagine if you're out on the road, there are probably things that arise. Do you have any either funny stories or horror stories or both about soup delivery?
Yeah. Unfortunately,
you
I have
can
both.
Repeat.
Yeah. Well, you know, trailers are popular in Portland with the homeless crowd, bike trailers, and so I've been mistaken for a homeless person before.
Really?
I was biking around in Southeast Portland, and I was at a stop sign. A guy rolls up next to me in his car. He rolls his window down and he says, "Hey, want my glass bottles?"
Like, "No, sir. I am already full of soup."
"Oh, would you like some soup?"
Yeah. Were you wearing plaid?
No.
Did you have, was your beard bigger than usual?
I don't remember.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. It seems like I've seen some pictures of your fleet. And actually, I think I'm a school bus driver. And so I think rolling down 33rd, I think I might have actually seen either you or one of your employees, but I think it looked like you one afternoon as I was returning the bus to the yard. You look pretty polished. So I guess it's hard to assume that that someone of your appearance would be collecting cans or bottles, but
I thought it was pretty funny too.
What can you do?
Yeah. And the other thing that comes to mind, this is always surprising to me when I'm biking around, there's a question that we get really often. And that question, people will yell it to us from the sidewalks. So people yell, "What you got in there?" And I will never understand this question, because we got a big blue trailer and it's got a big sign that says Soup Cycle.
Right.
I'm not sure what people think we have in there, but they keep on asking it.
Well, topsoil.
As we understand, literacy rates are falling, so maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe it's just impossible to tell what's in a soup cycle trailer if you can't read. But
what
can you do?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Does anybody yell that to you when you're driving the school bus?
No, I think it's probably pretty evident. There's a cultural precedent set for it. I was thinking it's kind of like the city bikes buckets, there are other people that make them as well. I went traveling, over to the East Coast where my wife's family is from, and we took our bike buckets on the plane.
Which, for those who don't know, are like 5-gallon mayonnaise buckets or something like that, food buckets that have a little reverse tension system that you can affix to your back rack.
Yeah, exactly. We would get on the airplane, and I guess in Portland, I get used to carrying a bucket around, and nobody seems to think it's odd because there are so many people carrying buckets. But getting on the plane and going to the East Coast and then walking around in downtown Boston with bags and buckets and backpacks and all these things just fresh off a tour, you can't believe the number of people that would ask, and like, "Are you going clamming? You know, did you pick berries?" All that sorts of things. So, yeah. You do something just slightly unusual, slightly out of the norm, and people will be very curious.
Yeah,
and perhaps not so intuitive. Yeah. What kind of trailers is it that you use? I'm not sure how to conjugate that. You use trailers. What kinds are they?
Tell us about them.
We get our trailers from a ma and pa shop down in Sutherland, Oregon, called Blue Sky Cycle Carts. And they are incredible. I recommend them to anybody who's listening. They're very durable, and we put 250, 300 pounds on them and do that consistently every week for years. And they hold up pretty darn well. If you go to their website, it doesn't look like much, I think, just because their focus is mostly on the product and not the tech side of it. But it's a good product. And I found out about them because there's a guy here in Portland who does chocolates delivered by bike to some of the local co-ops, Wingnut Confections. Ooh. And it's his company. And I met with him and he recommended these trailers. And I bought them and they've worked great.
Very nice. You say that it's about 200 to 300 pounds. I guess soup is – there's a lot of liquid in soup. And if you've ever tried to carry a gallon of milk or something, I'm sure you would know that that's heavy. So is it difficult to stop when you've got that much weight kind of moving behind you?
If it's rainy out or, heaven forbid, snowy out, it takes – much longer than if you're not pulling a couple hundred pounds, but it hasn't been a problem. And on the bike I'm using now, I've got disc brakes. That works really well.
I would imagine that helps a lot. Disc brakes. I've actually been envious of them for a long time, but, someday, what kind of a bike do you ride?
I started the company, with a recumbent electrical assist bike. That was the electrical system was made by a local company. And I liked that a lot. It was great for getting around and, you know, zipping to new customers. But we eventually shifted away from the electrical assist because battery technology is such right now that batteries can't sustain a 20 mile or 30 mile route. You'll run out of batteries and the technology is heavy. So when you run out of batteries,
it's not just like coasting to a stop and then saying, well, now I have to pedal, but you also have to pedal like all that lithium.
It's not pretty. Yeah. So we just decided to go low tech, and that was a great decision, I think, for now. Maybe, you know, in another 5 years, battery technology and the electrical assist technology will be such that we can go back to that. But the just good old fashioned pedal power has been fantastic. So now I use a Rally Sojourn, which is Rally's touring bike.
Very nice.
And it's just a great, reliable bike.
Right, and it's British, and those Brits know what they're doing.
Yeah, I always feel good to me.
It's kind of like if you're getting vinyl from the UK, it always comes as like 180 gram, whereas if you buy something in the States, it may not be that durable. So, and Brooks saddles, I just got one of those recently, and that's a British saddle, and it's very well made and very very pleasing, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Well, congratulations, sir. I was curious, maybe just as far as like going back into your childhood or into your younger adult years, how did you get excited about bikes just initially, like in life?
I was very anti-outdoors and athletics for years. And what shifted was just
so to
having...
speak.
Yeah. What shifted was I had a friend, Zach Wild. I remember his name. He actually lives in Portland now, and we both grew up in Salt Lake City. And he got into mountain biking, and I followed suit. I loved it. So I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah, and that is just an amazing place for the outdoors. There's you know, all sorts of canyons right by the place where I grew up, where you can mountain bike or road bike up the canyons if it's paved in certain parts. And that's just where it all started.
Yeah. Was it the rush of the speed or the beauty or anything in particular that kind of arrested your attention?
It was those, and it was also the challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think what's continued it is the idea of, you know, being in a city, not owning a car and living by bicycle fits with my ideas of voluntary simplicity and, you know, living a low carbon life and, you know, a life that's more focused on my neighborhood rather than, you know, a massive city and getting around from, you know, driving from Vancouver to Gresham every day for a job.
Right. Those highways are, they're terribly gnarled and tricky for that kind of a commute. And really, Brandon and I are all about that. The Sprocket Podcast is a big proponent of the local lifestyle and being able to do more with less. And that's a good thing to underscore. We appreciate that. Well, thanks, Jed. Is there anything you'd like to kick in before we wrap things up?
Oh, where can we find you online?
Oh, good question.
Oh, yes. We do have a website. Your listeners can just Google Soup Cycle. We'll come up at soupcycle.com. And if you have listeners who are in the Portland area, they can, you know, put on the website that they heard about it through this podcast, and I'll give them half off their first week.
Oh, you hear that, folks? That's a discount for Soup Cycle subscribers. If you're a new subscriber, check it in. Is there a special discount code, or is it just a mention us?
It's Brock.
Oh, thanks.
That's the discount code.
Well, thank you, Jed. We appreciate you joining us for this special taped and delayed broadcast edition of the Sprocket Podcast. We wish you the best and good luck out there. The weather will be turning up, I hope, very soon. So we wish you sunnier skies and smoother sailing ahead.
All right. Thanks. Great for joining you guys.
All right.
Yeah.
Talk to you later. Well, thanks again for joining us, folks. We have another live show coming up next week on June 27th. It'll be me and my friends Joe and Jeff and the brewery tour that we will be taking as you listen to this podcast on July 5th, Friedel of Traveling2.com. July 12th, Darren Alf of BicycleTouringPro.com. And on July 19th, Adrian and Deanna and their Raw Vegan Fixie Tour, which was fantastic and informative. All right, you can email us at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Phone us at 503-847-9774. Go to the web at thesprocketpodcast.com. Ryan J. Lane is the guy that gives us our intro music and outro music. You can find him on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane. We look forward to seeing you next time, and have a great one. Bye.